Hey guys, it's Adam. I just got done recording our newest episode with Tess and Deborah about gun rights from a female perspective. Didn't go as smoothly as I'd hoped. Tess was a great guest, and we hope that we get to talk to her again soon sometime. What I'm trying to do is get Deborah to engage in topics that make her uncomfortable or maybe think about things in a way that she's never thought before in her little liberal bubble, kind of the main thing we're trying to do on the show. And I thought that if I brought a woman on to talk about the importance of a woman's right to firearms and self-defense, that it might kind of change her opinions on things. And I don't think I did a very good job in engaging her and trying to get that point across. So I hope you enjoyed the episode. It was extremely frustrating for me. Tess was a great guest, and I just want to get that out there. I'll keep trying, guys. But I understand if this isn't the best episode yet on my part. Okay, thanks. See you soon. Bye.
I just want this shit so to escape from reality. Yeah, I don't need this shit. I am reality. That's the way it ought to be. That's the way it is.
Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode 159. It is Tuesday, November 7th, 4 p.m. Pacific time. How's everybody doing out there? Deborah is here. Her video is not on, and her microphone is not on. There she is. She's there. She's putting on the headset.
Hi there.
Hey, welcome to the show. Guys, we are a value for value production. So, if you would like to contribute to the show, all the money goes back to the show. Donations have been a little bit light lately. Time, talent, treasure. You can hit us up on Twitter. You can send money through Venmo, PayPal. We haven't been fined $2,500 yet, but it's coming. So we'll need some money in our PayPal account for when that happens. And what else? Cash App, all that stuff. Crypto, even though it's shit the bed. And if you want to get in contact with us, our email is deborahgetsredpilled@pm.me. So you don't have to type in Proton Mail anymore. I enabled the pm.me, so it's a little bit shorter address. But all those links are in the show notes. We are also sponsored by the Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. Our good friend Tony Arterburn is doing it over there in Branson, Missouri. He has a brick and mortar store there. And if you want to do it online, you go to deborahgetsredpilled.gold. It'll take you to Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. And if you buy something, we get a little kickback. Nobody's done it yet, but when you do, somebody let us know. He's got the Wolfpack program over there. It is a subscription, monthly subscription program where Tony will procure for you the finest in precious metals, have them delivered to your door. There's a membership starting at $50 a month. Takes all the brain work out of it for you. So get over there, check it out, let us know what you think. Deborah's open on alcoholic beverages probably.
Yep. It sure is. Gift giving season is upon us, so you know, there you go. Make your gift giving easier.
I know you'd probably want some gold for Christmas.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we all know why. Okay, so let's see what's going on. Rough day on the homestead today.
I'm so sorry. Yeah,
lost another sheep. I got home from church yesterday and was putting the sheep away, and only 3 out of 4 of the ones that I let free range came when I was trying to put them away. And I was like, where's Lloyd? So I start walking around the property. He's a little bit slower than everybody else. So I was like, maybe he's over, you know, eating grass somewhere else. So I go and I start looking for him. Can't find him. And I walk over to the barn and I see his body just laying there at the entryway to the barn. And I'm like, oh no. So I run over and he's not eaten by an animal or anything like that, but he is, he's not moving. He's alive. And I try to move him, try to get him up, and he just kind of like falls back over. And I called my neighbors. They came over and take a look at him real fast. What's that loud noise?
On my end?
Yes.
Tree trimming.
Oh, okay.
Which is going on in my backyard, and they may come knock on the door at some point, and I'll have to go hand them a check.
Okay, well, if so you hear know. Any saws going again, hit the mute button for me, okay?
Okay. And got it.
And then, call the neighbors. Neighbors come over with some medicine, tell me it's probably from this bacteria that occurs naturally in the ground that comes up when it rains, when it starts raining super hard. And but they say he's looking all right. He'll probably make it through the night. So they say get a heat lamp on him. I cover him up with a tarp. And he seems, once he gets the medicine, he seems to liven up a little bit. He's still laying on the ground. So I put hay all around him, cover him with a tarp. And they say in the morning, give him some more medicine. I go out there this morning and he didn't make it through the night. So it's pretty sad. I loaded him up in the truck, took him up behind the house to the logging road, and he's up there now. So he'll go back to nature soon enough. Somebody will come and take him away. So it's kind of a bummer, you know, lost two guys in the last month or two. Month and a half or something like that. So
yeah,
I think it's just part of the deal. So we still have 6. So I put the ones that I want to breed together today. So I got one with one of the little ram that was born here last year, and then one with the other one, or two with the other one. So we'll see what happens. But yeah.
I'm sorry. That's not happy news.
Yeah, it's just part of the deal, you know. So
right.
But other than that, it's cold and it's rainy, and yeah, that's about it. Just
So how long till this bacteria in the ground is diluted enough or how long does it take for, is it the rain or the cold?
It's the rain, I think. Because if you look it up online, it says in the southeast, it gets brought up in the spring from the humidity.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just kind of naturally occurring and has a bigger effect on some of them than others. But there's ways to treat it. So I ordered all the medicine I need for it. And
Yeah,
I can treat their water and stuff like that. So
so proactively, so they don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Everybody else seems like they're in pretty good shape. But what's been going on with you?
Well, besides getting a bunch of trees trimmed, what else has been going on? Went to a show in the city with my sister.
Who'd you see?
A play. We saw a play.
Oh, called... you know what we never asked you about? Did you go to the Roger Waters show yet?
Oh, absolutely.
How come you never gave us an update on that? How'd that
go? I'm sorry. It was fabulous. It was a fabulous show.
Yeah.
Did
he call, like, do the whole thing, like call Joe Biden a war criminal and all that
stuff? Oh, yeah. Oh yeah. The whole time there was video on big screens while he was performing with statements.
Yeah.
And yeah.
What was the most shocking statement that you can remember?
Oh God, I'm sorry, it goes back a few weeks now. So I don't remember specifically
You
because
don't
there
think
was,
anything really, nothing really stood out and stuck in your brain?
well, because it was so intensive and constant.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I was really more focused on him as a performer. That's why I was there. So the other stuff, yes, it had an impact, but like I say, it was so nonstop that there was a lot of footage of wars being fought as well as written statements.
Did he cover, can you remember if he covered anything about the war in Ukraine?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Where was it at?
It was at the was it at Chase? I've been to Chase and I've been to the Orpheum both in the last few shows. So it was either at the Chase or the Orpheum, which is those are like stupendously different from one
Well,
another.
it's
The
probably at
Orpheum.
the bigger one, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking it was at Chase.
Yeah.
Is
Is
that
that where the Warriors play?
that's where the Warriors play?
The toilet bowl.
Is that what they call it? Kind of
Well,
looks like that.
look at an aerial view of it. Looks
Oh,
like a toilet seat.
yeah.
That was after our time, so we never got a chance to go there. Who did you go with?
I went with my
Oh man.
sister and Pia.
What did your I mean your sister is as blue-pilled, loves the DNC more than anybody in the world, even though she reminds me a huge deal of Donald Trump. What was her thoughts on it? What do you think she thinks when like Joe Biden's getting called a war criminal and that the war in Ukraine is bad and stuff like that?
No, we didn't have any conversation about it at all.
Wild. Why not? Do you
Wasn't
think,
what, the point of the evening was.
isn't that the point of that whole show, though?
In part, yeah, but I'm not gonna bring up, I don't know, just wasn't why I was there. I was there to enjoy the music.
That's it.
Well, that was my main focus, put it that way. So anything else was secondary.
Interesting. Seems like it could have been a pretty good opportunity for you to get some points in, but
No, didn't happen.
not
Didn't happen.
your
No, no. Why we're not there. There's not going to be any. What's the word I'm looking for?
personal growth.
Well, that too. Yeah, but.
You don't have to be like to push points, but you could just be like, man, what'd you think about when he called Joe Biden a war criminal? And I guarantee it would have taken like three sentences and your sister would have had it back to Donald Trump somehow.
Probably.
Yeah. But how many drinks did she have?
I don't remember. We went to dinner first and then hoofed it over to the show.
Yeah. Are you familiar with this thing that's happening from people that get too many COVID boosters where they get this brain fog?
Well, I've heard of it, of course.
Yeah. Might be worth looking into, Deborah.
So you've said.
Well, that's it. That's it for the intro, guys. Our guest is here. Man, it's like when your child gets home from school and you ask them how school was, and they just say, "What was your favorite part of the school day?" And they just say, I don't know." It's very
And
frustrating sometimes.
well, you and I have different perspectives on on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm just not, I don't know. I'm going to let it slide.
You're going to let it slide. Thank you.
I'm going to let it slide.
Well, in other words, in other news, people are loving the headlines show.
Good.
Deborah Does Headlines. That's what we're calling it. And hopefully you can continue doing that with me on a weekly basis. I'll mm-hmm. check in with you after the show today to see if we're on for this week. But okay. Hopefully we are. But let's pause and let our guest in. All right, guys, welcome back. We're here with our guest, Testimona. Thank you for being here. We're really excited to talk to you.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I've heard you on a few people's shows. I was really impressed with when you went on Kill the Mockingbirds, and I had a great conversation with Sean and those guys. And yeah, I was like, and then you started talking about how you were from the same state as me, how you left. And yeah, and then recently I saw you on the gram, and you're shooting guns and doing all sorts of cool stuff. So I thought, what a better, I've wanted to talk and do some shows with Deborah and kind of isolate her and talk to her about issues that I know that she still is pretty strongly against. And I thought, I always think like, I got to get girls on here to talk about this stuff with her because she'll identify more. So we're going to talk about guns today. But before we do that, why don't you give our very small audience a rundown on who you are, what you do, a little bit of your history?
Sure. So my name's Tess. My artist name is Testimona. I am a singer, rapper, lyricist. I fuse hip hop, dark trap, and lo-fi and blues. So my music sounds are all over the place. So I make music, and I also just recently started a podcast called The Great Silencing with Testimona. That was originally a blog and a Telegram chat, but it just got to the point where I was like, I have so much to talk about and say, and I kept going on other people's podcasts. I'm like, it just needed to happen. 'Cause people are, you know, we listen to things now more than we do have time to read them. So, podcaster, singer, rapper, lyricist are my primary things. I'm from Oregon. I relocated to Tennessee, to the Nashville area it's been about 8 months actually, which is crazy. But I relocated out here for a multitude of reasons. I wanted to get away from, you know, a lot of the madness that's going on the West Coast. When the shutdown happened, I was actually in Los Angeles. So it was even crazier there. But, Yeah. You know, there's a lot to why I left. But a big thing that I wanted to get involved with when I got out here, and it blew my mind how huge the community is essentially matrix exiting people, you know, people that are, I want to say the word self-reliant, but community building and being able to rely on each other is also so much a part of it that sometimes I feel like people might understand if I say self-reliance, that basically just means not depending on the government for your survival. So I've been able to learn a lot, whether that's like personal defense, home defense, stuff about homesteading, permaculture. It's just been absolutely incredible. And it's like so much has already happened, and I still feel like it's just getting started. So I absolutely love being out here. There are so many liberty-minded people that are coming together and organizing out here, and it's amazing. So I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Did your journey start during the pandemic, or were you headed in that direction prior?
So I actually was kind of headed in that direction prior. I guess my first time being what they say as red-pilled, I had just turned 16, and my boyfriend introduced me to Alex Jones. And so I started, like, you know, kind of going down the rabbit hole when I was about 16. And then when I got a little bit older, like there's a lot we kind of, there was a lot of craziness in my history, but when I got a little bit older, it's like, I knew all that stuff, and I knew the government was just not in any way what a lot of people think it is. And I was aware of a lot of this stuff, but my focus did kind of change to where that wasn't like the main thing I was doing, like, you know, deep dives and research and stuff. But then once the pandemic did hit, I mean, that was, or whatever you want to refer to it as, it's, I feel stupid even saying pandemic, but when the incident happened in 2020, I was just like, okay, like this, like it, I, in my head, I was like, this is not at all what people think it is or where they think it's going to go. And then I just kind of found myself in a situation where I was living in a pretty violent, like chaotic area. And, you know, the rabbit hole started. That's how I started getting more so into preparedness, because I know what it's like to be in an area unprepared when, you know, stuff hits the fan basically overnight and continues to escalate. So it got picked back up for sure in 2020, but I wasn't new to it. When I got to Tennessee, I kind of backed up a bit from doing as much of the deep dive stuff and kind of got more geared toward the preparedness element of like, okay, so we already know like all this stuff and we got to keep a pulse on it for sure. But also, what are we going to do about it? Like what can we do about it to like make sure that we can build resilience for not only what is, but what's coming. So that's where I'm at right now.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I thought I was pretty awake too until 2020. And that's what put everything in play for us. And we were in, you know, the suburbs right outside of Portland, and we got out and we're like way far out now and we have no neighbors and land and all that stuff, you know. But were you in Eugene? Or you said you were in LA during the pandemic, but are you from Eugene?
I am from Eugene. Yeah. So yeah, during the pandemic, I was living in Central and East Hollywood, like a block from the actual boulevard. So it was nuts. I eventually did go back to Oregon after like 8 months of just insanity, because everything was still shut and it was just getting worse. And so I did go back up to Eugene for a minute, but it's just not really a place that I can live in, you know, for various reasons. So I was able to get my money up and, you know, kind of get things situated is when I packed up my car and just drove across the country and wound up here. But I did spend, you know, during the era of like, you know, everything is closed and there's still mask mandates and all that stuff, I was either in California or in Oregon for like I think the week I left to go to Nashville was the week that Oregon lifted the mask mandate after having it for
Longer than anybody except for Hawaii, I think.
Yeah, like they had had it for like almost like I think maybe over 2 years or 2 years, but it was like, I mean, it was the end of March 2022, so they had it that long, like which nice. Obviously you guys know because you're there.
Deborah's in the Bay Area, so she's
California. Yeah,
they pretty much still probably have a mask mandate there, but yeah, it's wild. Like I go to church in Portland or in Milwaukee like every Sunday, and I like run errands when I'm in town, and it's you know still well over 10% of the population wears masks, I'd say more. And it's like, you know, and it's all virtue. It's like, no, but it's all young. Like I go to like the Home Depot on 82nd Avenue in Portland. And it's all like young couples that are still wearing masks and stuff. It's pretty wild, but
I know.
But up where we ended up in Columbia County, in between, you know, up by almost into Washington and there's no enforcement up here, no nothing. So we got up here. I quit my job in February. I'm on our farm full time. And it's crazy because it's like, I live my life. Like there's nothing going on. And then every once in a while I have to go into town. My wife has to go in every day to work. She still drives into Portland. So, do you ever get worried? I see, the Nashville area a lot, like just on social media and stuff, having like big giant like drag queen story hour stuff and things like that. Do you ever get worried that too many people are moving there and that it's going to end up being like the next Austin or something like that?
It pretty much already is. It's kind of reminds me of the LA of the South, because we do have so many people that have all moved here. Cause like everybody left California, not everybody obviously, but so many people left, and some people left for reasons like for why I exited or for why you got out of Portland. You know what I mean? But yeah. Some people left because they didn't, they were just like, it's too expensive, but everything else they wanted to keep the same. So Nashville and that county, Davidson County itself, is pretty big. So it depends on what part you're in. Like there's certain areas where it's like, yeah, it almost feels like I'm back in LA if I were to go in there. But the rest of Tennessee, not at all. But yeah, there are a lot of people moving here. The cost of living is going through the roof. Rent prices are going through the roof. I actually, like when I first moved here, I was living like in the city, but I was just like, with everything that was going on and the things I had a pulse on, I'm like, this is, you know, it's progress, because I'm not where I was, but I'm still in a high population dense area, which is not where I want to be. So I did, after a few months, relocate. Like I'm still in Middle Tennessee and like in the greater Nashville area, but I am not like in the city part of Nashville. So I backed up as well, just because, you know, like if anything happens, like that, the cities are the last place you want to be. So and then once I'm done where I'm at now, I'm going to be moving even further away. So just slowly backing away from large concentrations of people.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, just little steps and getting out. At least there's opportunity to do that there. Our good friend Scott from Truthzilla, he's a Eugene to Tennessee guy. So
yeah, he actually moved out here, I want to say 1 month after I did.
Yeah.
And we didn't even know the other one. We didn't even know that that was happening. And then like, I think he saw that I moved on social media or something. And he was like, I'm about to move there too.
Yeah.
So yeah. So
right on.
Interesting timing.
And then I also saw that you just celebrated a big sobriety birthday. Is that right?
Yeah, it's so me and Chelsea, we both have our sobriety birthdays in November. Mine's technically on November 27th.
Oh, so it's coming
up. I'll be celebrating 13 years, and then hers was November 1st. So I just decided, because she was visiting me in October, she came out for the Self-Reliance Festival. I also got to perform at that festival. She got to meet like incredible people in the community out here. So she was here for like a week. So we recorded the pod then. And then I just was like, I'll just release it in November, you know, because I didn't want to wait till like the end of the month, because, you know, she's November 1st. So I've got about, I don't even know what date it is. I probably have like another 2 weeks to go till I'm officially 13 years sober. But yeah, it is that month again, which is so weird.
That's great. It's yeah,
another thing.
Yeah, my wife.
Congratulations.
My wife's been sober for 11 years, and then I've been sober for 10 years. So yeah.
What?
Yeah. So.
That's so cool. I didn't even know that. That's awesome. Well, congratulations to you both.
Yeah, thank you.
Especially for sticking with it through the last couple of years, because that's been hard for a lot of people.
Yeah, she did a lot of Zoom stuff. I didn't do anything, and I go to meetings with her every once in a while now. So it's not as big as it was in my life, but you know, it's what I totally credit my life to 12-step stuff. So yeah, I've always liked to meet other sober people, and then it happens a lot in this space, you know. So it's pretty cool.
That is actually really cool. Thank you for sharing that, because I had no idea. So yeah, it's awesome to know like who else is on this very interesting journey.
Yeah. Are you performing pretty much a lot just at Freedom stuff, or are you getting like regular type shows, or what goes on there?
So I told myself I was gonna wait to start performing, just because I am working on like multiple different albums, but that, like, in the beginning that worked out, and then it was like I traveled like to North Carolina, which is a neighboring state, and somebody was like, we need a singer, and I just wound up and I'm like, oh, I'm singing on a stage now for 3 hours, I guess I am. And because I hadn't performed since before COVID, because well, obviously everything was closed. And then you had that issue of you need to have your papers in order to do it. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. So I wound up doing that and then perform it. So then the Freedom Festivals, like those are excellent places to perform. So then that became a thing. And then I have performed in downtown Nashville as well, like just at writer's rounds. So it's all a bit of a different vibe. So I'm kind of like, I'm trying not to go too hard with it because I do have so much work in the studio to get done. But like when I just did a Self-Reliance Fest at the beginning of this month, I played over an hour. So I definitely have like enough new material. Like I've just been hitting it like super hard since I've been here. But there's so much more to go. So yeah, I take what makes sense to me. Like if, you know, I'm also learning that I have to take better care of my vocal cords because I lost my voice from overuse, and I have a great vocal coach out here, but I'm learning there's like a whole thing that I was doing wrong. So I'm trying to balance like how much I'm doing in the studio versus like how much I'm focusing on like the stage, because it's just a lot. So I'm not performing full force, but at like for events and festivals, absolutely. Yes.
Awesome.
You say you're in studio. Are you recording, and are you recording your stuff or with other people on their stuff, or how? Because I'm this is new to me.
Oh, that's totally fine. So it is my studio. I am recording my stuff. However, something that has been super amazing since I've been out here is that I've met, well, obviously there's so many musicians out here. But so I've done some like joint studio sessions with other musicians, like if we're collaborating on something. And then also a way that I have discovered that I can make money is, and I love doing this, I never thought this would be so gratifying, but there are a lot of people that are, you know, maybe they run like a tactical operation company, or maybe they run a permaculture business and channel, like various people that have, you know, podcasts and YouTube channels and stuff like that. They're homesteaders, they're doing this and that. And a lot of them I've met at these freedom festivals. And I mean, you guys know, you have a podcast, like, you know, everybody has like their intro song or their music that's about their brand. And so a way that I've gotten to contribute to what they're doing is I've actually been able to also, aside from my own music, I get to write music for other people and like their mission, their brand, what needs to be communicated for what they're doing. And I never thought I would be doing that, but it is like, it's amazing to be able to do that. Like it's the coolest thing ever to just get out of yourself and just totally focus on somebody else and just project that to the world. It's like, it's really beautiful. So I also do that. When I'm in the studio, I'm working on a couple songs right now for somebody. And then I've got like at least two albums more worth of stuff for myself.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've heard Nashville has a lot of large obese women at bachelorette parties. Is that true?
I don't know if they're all obese. I'm just like trying to think. So that is a thing, like the bachelorette stuff. I don't get it. But if you come down here, like, and if you go to downtown Nashville and go down on Broadway, it's a nightmare. Like, yeah. I will not drive if it's nighttime. No. And then on the weekends, they straight up shut that street down. And it's like Vegas. It's nuts.
I was just going to say, it sounds like Las Vegas.
Yeah. Like
is it crazier than Sixth Street in Austin? Like worse than that, probably, huh?
Yes. Yes. It's a lot crazier than that. So I do not live near that. So I'm glad about that. But yeah, they call them Nashlorettes. And then like people refer to that area as Nash Vegas.
Nash Vegas. That's so cringy.
Yeah. So there have been like obviously plenty of times when I am downtown for business. And like, I have to be there at night, like I'm working or I'm doing this or I'm doing an event, like whatever. And I'll be there. And then like, all of a sudden I look over and there's like a tractor with like plexiglass, obviously, because everyone's drunk inside. and it's just like a bunch of screaming people. And so I actually filmed it for one of my friends because she was like, I want to see the broads in the tractor. But I was like, well, here they are. Yep. It's just like you get used to it after a while, but I'll be honest, it's annoying. But I'm also somebody who, like, you know, like I don't drink or like, you know, bar hop. So it's just like, it just sounds like screechy chaos to me, and I'd prefer to not be around it.
Yeah. It's so weird when you get sober and then you end up in like those situations, like those highly fueled alcohol type situations. It's, for me at least, it's just really, really uncomfortable. And I get like real nervous and on edge, and you can like feel the, especially like if you got like three beers in you, it like dulls it. But like when you're not, you can like sense that violence in the air, you know? Yes. Being in around people that are drinking to me is just gross, and it's not something I want to do. But yeah, I know how it is to have to go to the city, and it's weird when you get desensitized to it. And like, especially going into Portland now, we can use this to segue into self-defense, you know. Like I said, my wife has to go into town every day. She works on Burnside, and she has this beautiful studio, but it's just you know, lately it's just, there's been tons of homeless. She works on the second level of like this big building that has all sorts of different like boutiques and stuff in it, but she stays there late at night. She gets there early in the morning, and there's like homeless people like smoking meth there. And I'm really trying to get her to, she's taken the CCW or CHL, I guess, concealed handgun license class before, but I think she never like went through and got her appointment to get it from the sheriff. I think it's lapsed, but I think she's going to redo it just because it's a bad deal. Like she was at work, you know, on a Sunday, and there's nobody there. She works Sundays. And she has like a back area to her studio, and she like heard the door open and like went out, and there was like a homeless woman like inside the studio, you know. And it's just like, she like saw her and left. But like, man, it really freaks me out that she has to do that. And it's just scary to think that like that it's not always going to be like a homeless woman that like sees her and like scurries off, you know? So it's like, and like, she has to like go outside to go to the bathroom and stuff like that. When did guns and self-defense and stuff start coming across your radar?
Well, growing up, I was around it, but not in the sense of like, oh, someone's taking me hunting and teaching me how to use it properly. Like, but it was never like strange to me, but it became like, I became pretty drawn to it. I want to say like, this was when I lived in Oregon, and obviously in Oregon, they have different laws. Like Tennessee is constitutional carry, so like you don't even need a license, which I very much appreciate, because it's just one less thing I have to pay for. So
yeah.
So you don't need a license there, but in Oregon you do. So I remember when I was 18 years old in Oregon, and I was not sober then. I actually went through like a 10-week class at the Baron's Den in Eugene, and like, which is what you need to get, like, at least back then. I don't know what it's like now,
but now back it's then, you know, it's a, to get, are you talking about to get concealed handgun license?
Mm-hmm.
It's a 4-hour class, and then and then it's a shall issue state. So a lot of people want to think that like, just because Oregon has Portland in it, that we'd have like really, really bad gun laws here. Like, we don't have constitutional carry, but it's shall issue. So you take a 4-hour class, and you can do it online now through the sheriff's department. That's it. That's probably the only difference we have between Tennessee and here. Washington's bad. Like, they have magazine restrictions and stuff like that. But here, there's no restrictions. But you do have to have a concealed handgun license. Yeah. So that we don't have constitutional carry. But other than that, it's good. So I remember.
What is a shell? You said a shell issue. What's that?
It means if you're not a felon, Deborah.
Yeah.
And you go and you just sign up for the concealed handgun license course, you can go to like Sportsman's Warehouse, which is like Big Five, you know, and they'll have like classes on Sunday. It's 4 hours long. And then It's not like in California where the sheriff will like look it over, like do like find out who you are and stuff like that. They'll do background checks, I guess, but they'll give it if you don't have felonies and stuff, you get it. They shall issue it.
Okay.
So yeah. So like where I live, pretty much I live out in the woods, you know, so I go through life. I spend life either in Columbia County or over in Longview, Washington, and I treat everyone as if they're carrying a handgun, because that's pretty much what I think's going on. But yeah, sorry to cut you off there. But yeah, so Oregon's not as bad as people think. But so go ahead, keep going. Sorry to cut you off.
Oh, you're fine. No, Oregon's not that bad, but I'll get to why it was bad for me. But California is the one that's at least where I lived. I don't know anything about the Bay Area.
Terrible. I lived there for a long time.
Awful. Yeah. So when I was in LA, it's like, I mean, this is way further in my story, but if somebody breaks into your house and you shoot them, you get a murder charge. Like, you are basically not allowed to defend your life. And I could go off, but California is horrific. That's like number one reason why I will not ever live there again, is because of that, the gun laws. So, but I'll rewind. So when I was 18, I mean, I don't know why I've always been very attracted to firearms. I mean, I could take a guess, but they're kind of darker stories, but, based on some things that I've been through in my life, being able to defend my body has been an issue. So that's why, you know, firearms for a small child or a teenager or a small woman, that's an equalizer if you have experienced that kind of stuff. So it was intriguing and empowering to me, because I wanted to feel safe. So when I did go through the 10-week course at the Barron's Den, I did get the license. However, I was only 18 and you have to be 21. So I was like, whatever, you know, like whatever, it doesn't matter, I'll just wait. But then by the time I was 20, I was a felon, so I couldn't have a gun. Yeah. So I was like, ah, shit. So I had felonies on my record for like quite a bit of time. They got expunged. God, when did they get expunged? I still have the letter somewhere, actually, because I was so happy about it. But they did wind up getting expunged like a number of years later. But my PO, which I found out later wasn't even true. She told me, she goes, even when your felonies are expunged, you don't get your Second Amendment rights back. You have to reapply through the ATF. And I was like, and a lot had happened. And like my felonies were expunged, everything was all good. And then like, you know, during the whole scamdemic, there was some chaos in my neighborhood and in my dwelling. Like, I didn't get any charges, but I was arrested, and it was just kind of a lot of madness. And so I was like, man, like, I don't want to deal with the ATF, and like, I kind of doubt they're going to give me, you know, that back. So I'm going to figure something else out. Then I found out that that wasn't even true, and that my rights were automatically reinstated upon having an expunged record. Cause right now my record is completely expunged. Like, I do not have any active or like charges at all. Like, my felonies are expunged. So I didn't know that until like way later. But it became a big thing really right when the pandemic hit. Like, some people thought I was crazy. But this was literally week one of the stay at home order, which I think Oregon hadn't even been put on a shelter in place yet, but LA did. I don't know if it was all of California. I think it was. And I remember like talking to one of my friends, and I was like, yo, I need a gun. This is not going to end when they say it is. This is not going to stop when they say it is. And I was like, I have a feeling there's going to be like looting, robbing, violence. Like, the shit's going to hit the fan. I need a gun. And I was in a situation where, like, you know, because for whatever reason, it can be hard in some states that have really strict or just ridiculous gun laws to get something clean. So my only options were to like get something, you know, in a manner that, let's just say, I wasn't comfortable with, because I'm like, I don't know what, you know, that individual might.
Laurie Anderson.
Huh?
Sorry. Sorry about that. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I was just in a situation where I was like, you know, I didn't want to get a gun that way. Cause I was like, well, I don't know where it's been. So I didn't really want to like take the chance with that. So I was always hunting for something that that was legit and I couldn't find it. And then stuff did get really bad. And there was a lot of violence and a lot of stuff that happened even where I was living. And so I don't know how, I won't really, unless you want me to, I won't get too deep into those stories because they're kind of intense, but it was pretty bad. And I did know people with firearms, but there were two things that happened. So I was living in central Hollywood, and when things got really bad, the freeways got blocked off. And so I couldn't get out. And my friends that didn't live in Hollywood, they lived more like outskirts area or like just different parts of LA. They couldn't get into me. So like there was nothing we could do. Like it was just like can of psychotic ass sardines. So
people blocking the freeways?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There were people blocking the freeways, and there were incidents of people getting pulled out of their cars and like just attacked for literally no reason.
Yeah.
Just,
like the old Reginald Denny Jesus. Treatment.
Yeah. It was insane.
Was it all fentanyl overdose Floyd related?
Yes. In the beginning it was. Yeah. It was right around that time. Yeah. Of all that shit. So it was like, it was scary for a lot of us, especially women, because we were like, you know, when you're driving, especially in that area, because riots or looting or just chaos, that it would erupt randomly without warning. And so I'm like, if I'm in my car and there's a mob of people and I turn a corner and they're all there and all of a sudden they see me, like, I don't know, like even during the day, like I have no idea what I'm going to drive into. So there was a while when like me and some other, like other females were like, let's coordinate like really early morning trips. If we have to get groceries and like go together, stick together. Some people moved out of Hollywood. Some people moved out of California. I was stubborn. I stayed a little longer, but that was one thing. And then the other thing was the people, the men that I did know that, you know, did have firearms and that talked a really good game of like, oh, if anything ever happens, I'll do fill in the blank. Like, oh, I'll help you. I'll protect you. No, no. Like when shit hits the fan, like they were real far out. They were all the way away from that mess. So I was like, you know, I was just like, all right, cool. Like when shit hits the fan, this is how people behave, and everybody is very like self-preserving. Like, do not expect anybody to save you or give a shit about your life, because they don't. So that message was loud and clear. So that was kind of when I was like, all right, like enough with the shit. I am absolutely not like being in any kind of situation where I cannot defend myself. And I'm also the other side of that as well, is like, don't be in the middle of where the problem is either, which in that situation, like nobody was expecting that. It happened overnight, but now I do know better, which is why I don't live in the middle of a big city anymore. And which is why like I have plans and routes, and like, there's always like a way for me to duck like wherever I'm at. So, you know, the way that I move is much different now, but that became a thing, like immediately something in my head once that happened was I had no idea like it was going to play out the way it did, but I was like, we're going to be dealing with people going crazy. We're going to be dealing with violence, with robberies, with lootings. I need to be able to protect myself. And that's, you know, that is what happened. And honestly, like with some of the situations I'm in, I'm lucky I made it out. But I don't ever want to be in that situation again, especially unarmed. I mean, that was terrifying. And it was not, it extended far beyond the time period of the riots as well. Like you'd think it would have died down. It totally didn't. But actually, no, you know, because you live in Portland and it didn't die down in Portland either. So it just kind of got worse. But that was when it like really re-entered my head of like, no one's coming to save you. Like if somebody helps you, icing on the cake, but if shit hits the fan, expect to self-rescue. Like, you know, nobody's coming.
Yeah. Yeah. Deborah. So let's start talking to Deborah, getting some of her thoughts, because Deborah, since the show has been going for 2 years, 2.5 years, you've clung to the idea that all guns should be outlawed, correct?
Not necessarily all guns, but I do think there is a overwhelming God, I'm sorry, my brain's not working today. There are too many out there in the hands of people who shouldn't have them.
Okay. It's really hard to move on to like craft a debate with this. When you hear what Tess says, what do you think about, or you hear about your daughter, feeling unsafe at work and, there's violent, mentally insane homeless people running around. What is your, what do you think about women, arming themselves and you said you, well, let's go there. What do you think of that first?
Well, for myself, I would not be comfortable owning a gun because I'm afraid, first of all, it's a foreign concept to me. I mean, it just was not even discussed where and when I grew up, and there's the
truth. But it was, that's at least 50% of the gun owners in America are like that. I didn't grow up with guns as well.
Yeah. The first time I ever was around a gun was going to visit my husband's family in rural Louisiana. They had shotguns because they hunted. Or I guess they were shotguns, maybe they weren't, but that was my first exposure. It just is a foreign concept to me. And I am concerned if somebody tried to enter my house and I held a gun, they would use it on me.
What's the alternative?
I don't have an answer for that. I don't have an answer for that. The alternative is that I don't know. I know you think I'm just popping out on it, but
I understand like you personally not feeling comfortable and that's the choice that you have to make.
Right.
I think it's wild because I think, there's a bridge that separates you from Richmond, California, which is one of the gnarliest places on the West Coast. And then there's a bridge separating you from San Francisco, which, everybody knows about that.
Yeah.
People can walk to your house. And then, it's just weird to think, like,
a gun would not give me comfort. A gun would not make me feel safe.
But that's just because you're scared. You think like if you had it and you like drop it on the ground that it would go off or something like that.
You know what? I hate to do this. The guys are here. I have to go write them a check. I'll be right back. I'm sorry. Please explain to Tess why I'm doing this, please.
Okay. This is a little bit frustrating today. Sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah. Here, I'll pause. Okay, guys, we're back. So, Deborah, you're talking about how you're not comfortable around firearms, but what is your opinion on like other women? What I've explained about your daughter's work? Has she told you anything about that?
That's entirely up to, of course, Emily.
We understand that it's up to them, but what is your opinion on it?
How can I make it any more? I mean, it is my opinion. What I would do is, I'm not saying that that's what everybody else should do, but for me, I would not carry a gun.
Right. What do you think?
I'm not saying that anybody else shouldn't have a good reason, Yeah.
But you think do you think people should have the right to do it?
I think they should have the right to do it within, certain reason.
What?
I don't think anybody should have an assault rifle.
Why not? What's an assault rifle?
Well, anything that is, I don't know the names of the different.
You're doing CNN stuff, Deborah. You're just saying CNN stuff.
I'm just trying to be honest, Adam. I'm just trying to answer you.
But you're saying that nobody should have an assault rifle and you can't even define it.
Okay. To me, an assault rifle is something that shoots off you know, a barrage of, you know, 60 bullets or whatever you call them in, you know, 20 seconds. Is that reasonable?
I don't know. Is it always going to be just the barrage of 60 and 20? Is that what makes assault rifle for you?
But you know, if you're carrying a handgun, if that's something different. If you're carrying a weapon of mass destruction.
Well, but you're just saying words, Deborah. You can't define them.
Because I this is not something that I'm familiar with. I have my opinion, and maybe it's not an informed opinion because I don't know about, you know, guns and those types of things. What do you want from me?
Strange to have an opinion but to not be able to like define anything or to explain your thoughts at all,
because it's not something that is in my everyday, I don't think about it a whole lot. I think about it when I see stuff on TV, like, you know.
Well, what's this whole show about? It's like, when you see stuff on TV, we kind of got to take it down a few more layers, right?
Well, what I was going to say is when you see stuff like, you know, schools getting shot, kids in schools getting shot, or, you know, somebody going berserk at a concert and shooting people.
Yeah. But we know that's not the real story the whole time, right?
Well, not the whole time, but sometimes it is.
Yeah. All right. Tess, do you want to try to get in here? This is tougher than I wanted it to be. Sorry.
Oh, for sure. Well, I think there's kind of two parts to that. I'll just start at the beginning. I guess the first thing is, like, you know, I think that's a pretty normal reaction or feeling for somebody who isn't familiar with firearms to feel like, you know, I'm not comfortable carrying one, because for me, like, I knew I needed one and I knew I was going to get one, but getting one versus carrying it or using it are two very different things. And like, so you obviously understand that they're not toys, which is great. Like, that's actually a really good thing, because some people will just go buy guns and like, they don't know what they're doing and they might make a mistake. And you know, that's, guns are not things that you want to make mistakes with. So what I did, and you can do this at shooting ranges, but I got connected with an organization called Tactical Response. They train law enforcement officers, they train civilian defense contractors, and they also train people who have never fired a weapon. Like, and their headquarters are here in Tennessee, but like, I've looked on their website, they are international, and they just had a class in Seattle, Washington. So they train like everywhere. I would not be surprised if there were classes near where you were. And I'm not like saying go do it or anything. I'm just saying, for me, what I said with myself, because like, I got my pistol, like I have, you know, the stuff that I need, whatever. But I'm like, until I feel like totally proficient with this weapon, which obviously the proficiency is going to require, you know, continued training and use of it. But I was like, I'm not comfortable carrying it, like, you know, on the regular either. If my only experience with a gun has just been firing at a shooting range, like, cause that's not even realistic. Like, there's so much into, you know, owning a gun like that you do need to know. And a big part of it is, you know, you do want to be comfortable with your weapon, and it kind of takes some time to get past the nerves of like, even the first time you shoot one, like there's recoil, it makes a loud noise. Like that's like, it gets your heart rate up, you know? So when I trained with Tactical Response, which I will be continuing to do, and they also have like medical training, like it's wild what they do. I was in a, and it's, it, this is a multiple day thing that they do. It's not just like a day at the range. Like it is, you are like doing this for like multiple days, depending on which class you take, and you're like with a group and you have trainers, and it's really amazing. But there were people, like, it was me, one other girl who had zero fire, never fired a gun, none, no firearms experience. But she was, she's an amazing woman, actually, mother of two young girls, and, you know, wants to know that she can protect them if she needs to. And there, everybody else in our group, all men, all experienced. Some of them were even ex-military. I remember one of them was standing next to me, and when we did our first drill, I like I missed a bunch of shots. The girl next to me was like, I missed all of them. And then, like, I looked over at the guys next to me. I'm like, how did you hit perfectly every time? And they're like, yeah, we were in the military, so, like, that's why. But so it, like, it totally didn't matter. But the biggest thing that class did for me is it, like, made me comfortable with the weapon to where it wasn't something that I felt like, it's something that I have genuine confidence. Like, if this obviously isn't happening right this second, but let's say some people kicked in my door right now and, you know, came in here to do me harm and my life was in danger, am I confident that I know how to use that weapon immediately and efficiently and correctly? Yes. To where I don't know that I would have been able to say that, you know, before that. And again, the training does need to continue. But that helped a ton, because all any of my, like, nerves that I had about, you know, because I was actually working with a new pistol as well.
But what'd you take with you?
I had a Canik TP9SF, and I also was working with a Glock 19 as well, but I had not fired a Canik before. So I love
that. I'm not, I've seen the name and stuff around, but I'm not familiar. I've never, what made you go that direction?
So first, one of my friends had it, and I was like, what is that? And he's like, oh, they're Turkish guns. Like, it's like, and then I asked my other friend, who is like a massive gun connoisseur, like, has been around guns his whole life, knows how to make them, like, knows all the things. I talked to him, and he was ranting and raving about that gun. He has the same one. He's like, that, I am in love with that gun. And he explained why. And, you know, I chose it for a variety of reasons, but, like, accuracy wise, like, for like a new shooter, like myself, like, it is a larger pistol. It's a longer barrel. Like, a Glock has more kick than a Canik. Like, the Canik does not have much recoil at all. So for accuracy, it's great. It also has an 18 round magazine. Obviously, if you have a chambered round, bonus 119. So I like that as well. You know, I mean, obviously I have multiple magazines, but, like, it's like, I'm in a whole nother situation if I have to run through multiple magazines, if they're all 18 rounds. So,
well, good thing if you had three, that's only 57. So that's under Deborah's definition of an assault gun.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, like, even the girl who had never fired a gun and was just like zero experience, both of us were, like, doing great through the drills, and they got harder as the class progressed. Like, you're moving, you're going through scenarios, you're, like, doing drills. Like, it's not just standing and shooting at something that isn't, like, it's, you know, practical stuff. So that was insanely helpful. It totally took away the fear and the anxiety, but it also really implanted certain things in your mindset that I would not have thought of before. So that kind of stuff can really help. Cause I would just suggest that to anyone. If you are not an experienced person with firearms, I think everybody should get one, unless you're, like, batshit out of your mind and just have fantasies about murdering random people. But that's, you know, I don't know anybody like that. So I'm very pro gun, just because it's the same concept as what we see among countries with nuclear weapons, like mutually assured destruction. As soon as one nuke got made, everyone's like, all right, well, we clearly all need them, because we can't trust you guys to just say you're not going to use them on us. So we're going to be in this, you know, I won't even talk about what's going on right now, but it's that same line of thinking of, like, okay, well, sure, they're not good, I guess, but they exist, and that's a reality. So the only way to really, like, assure that everyone stays in line now is if one person's got them, we all got to get them. And I'll just tell you right now, like a big reason why people are a lot more polite out here is because everybody carries a gun.
Yeah, that's so, kind of the point I was trying to get across when I said I treat everyone like they're armed around here, because most people are, you know?
Yeah. And like, and when, and people are like that, there is that, that saying, I know it's a cliche, but it's true. Like a well-armed society is a polite society. It's when people think that they're the only ones with a gun and everyone else is like free game, when they start to get, you know, cocky and arrogant and might start flashing it around, or they might go and try to, you know, harm you. But if they don't know, even just a level of uncertainty can be enough of a deterrence. But then if they go try to find out, like, you know, I mean, it's the difference between life and death. So the training aspect, I would just heavily emphasize that, because there is a big difference between being a gun fighter and being somebody who knows how to pull a trigger. And you also obviously want to know things like weapons maintenance, weapons safety. Like, you know, you want to feel safe. You don't want to feel less safe, because then if you have to use it, you might be shaky, you might miss. But I would say that. And then just the point that I brought up about even the concept of mutually assured destruction, it's like, yes, we do have a lot of weapons in circulation on this planet and in this country. Other countries that don't allow even things like knives, like they have crazy amounts of violence in those countries. Like, so violence is like a human problem that like we need to address. It's a symptom of a problem, but guns are already here and they're not going anywhere. So I would rather have one than, because there's nobody that I trust to be able to regulate who is responsible enough to have one and who isn't. And I, like, to be honest, I don't even think that's possible, especially in a country of over 300 million people. Like, you can't, I mean, who gets to be the decider for a decision like that? I mean, definitely not this government. No.
Yeah.
So why did the other girl who was in the class with you, why was she there?
Because she wanted to know that she could protect her two children. She has two small daughters.
Had she ever used a gun prior to that?
Never.
Mm-mm. Yeah. See, that would just be, it wouldn't even occur to me.
It's because, well, Deborah, maybe it's because of where you've lived for the past, you know,
my
38 years, you know, you have no threat of that happening. But not everybody is as fortunate not everybody gets to live in nice, perfect, totally safe areas, you know. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm a big fan of this guy Maj Ture, who's like this Hotep you know, gun rights guy, and his saying is always that all gun control is racist, you know, because why should we not allow people who live, I mean, I'm sure like you're fighting back the urge to say, well, if somebody broke into my house, I'd just call the police, because that's a terrible argument to have, because the police come like and write reports, they don't stop crime, you know.
And I could personally attest to that. I've had somebody do that and they took 2 hours to show up.
Yeah. I mean, I used to live in East Oakland for a long time, like 15 years.
Oh, like, shit, then you know.
I got robbed a lot of times, and I had guns stolen out of my house. And like, I would call the police to like make a report, and they would show up seriously like 8 days later. My friend got home invaded and they came 8 days later to take a report. So, and it's like, it's this boring cliche of like, well, but it's the total truth. It's you know, I forget what it is, but it's something about like when seconds matter, cops are like, you know, at best minutes away. So but one thing I like how you talked about being well trained and not just going out and getting a gun and going to the shooting range a couple times. Like, training is essential. And have you ever heard of the place in Southern Oregon called Thunder Ranch?
I have not.
You should check it out. They have a good YouTube channel, and the guy that runs it, I think his name's Clint Smith, I think. He's like Arlie Ermey. Like, he's like the drill instructor from Full Metal Jacket. He was in Vietnam. He got shot in Vietnam and stuff like that. And he just like yells motherfucker at you for like 3 days. And it's pretty, but yeah, check him out on YouTube. He's a really funny guy, but like a really badass gunfighter. And then he has like a bunch of dudes from like the Klamath fall SWAT team teaching the class. And I went there, you know, I built a bunch of AR-15s and assault rifles, as Deborah would call them, that she thinks should be taken away from me. I thought that I belonged to the gun club, and I used to go out there and shoot it and off the bench. And I thought I was like super cool, 'cause I could, you know, get really good groups off of a bench. And then I go to this 3-day like intensive, like their basic, you know, urban rifle course. And I left there like knowing like a couple different things. Like, one was that I don't know how to operate a firearm very well. Two, you know, and the main takeaway was I never ever want to be in a gunfight in my life. Like, this is absolutely terrifying. So it like teaches you respect for everything like that. And the whole thing, like when you first get a concealed carry license and you're like, oh, I thought about, like, 'cause I used to live in California and always like be like, man, I wish I could do that. And then like I moved to Oregon, I get it like within the first month that I'm living here, and like the first day I'm like going to leave the house, I'm like, oh man, this is the real deal. Like, I don't want to kill anybody, like, but I got a gun on me, you know, like I need to do everything in my power every time that this is on me to not use it, you know. Like, that's the main thing that people don't think about when they think people are just carrying guns around and shooting them off. But like I said, like, there's so many people out here, like, you know, having a rifle is a way of life. And what Deborah thinks is an assault rifle is like actually like a rifle that's perfectly suited to shoot coyotes or varmint around a farm. And you know, that's what I use it for, and they're fun. They're, you know, people won't admit this because they want to make like some big like Second Amendment argument. They're fun to have, they're fun to build, they're cool, they make loud noises, it's fun to like shoot off 30 rounds super fast at something, you know. Mm-hmm. They're just badass and fun, like, and that's like, all right, I'm not a big guy that preaches like the Second Amendment, because I think my right to like defend my life and my family's life isn't from like a piece of paper written in exactly. The 1700s. It's something that what I view as my God like gave me, you know, when I got here, you know. So yeah, I guess Deborah, what are any other thoughts?
Well, lots of thoughts. I just but it's just all like I'm just coming from such a I don't want to say naive, but I don't know anything about guns. Obviously I don't. And I can't understand how that would be fun. You know, make big noises and shoot off 30 rounds. It just doesn't seem like that would be fun. I mean, for me.
Okay.
Well, and that aspect, I mean, it might not be, or it might be. I mean, it's something, if you wanted to explore it, you could. But you're having the conversation, which is more than a lot of people will do. So that's great. But I'll just throw out one thing, because everybody does have different motives for, you know, why they're drawn to firearms or why they own them. And it is different, but, you know, a lot of it is looking at the way the world is. And even people who do live in gated communities or safe areas, like, those are areas that are already being targeted. And like, I worry about, like, you know, some of my family, they're armed to the teeth. I'm not worried about them. But I do have some family members where I'm like, hey, you need to get a gun and you need to get trained. But they, you know, they're not listening. There's nothing I can really do about it. But for me, the biggest thing, like when I bought my first pistol, I remember that day so clearly. And it had nothing to do with like, you know, oh, it's fun. I actually cried for 30 minutes. And the reason why I cried was tears of like relief. And I had no clue this was going to happen. But I cried tears of relief because this realization came over me. And I'm sorry if this is a bit dark, but like, I'll just say it, like the thought in my head was, I don't ever have to get raped again. And so for a lot of us, that's what it means. It's like, oh my God, like, cause I can't tell you that I can fight off a grown man three times my size. I can't. And getting into a knife fight with him, it's like, if you get in a knife fight with anybody, you're going to get cut. I don't care if you win or lose, you know what I mean? But like, but with that, I was like, oh my God, like I can feel safe at night. like living alone. With this, because of this, I don't ever have to get raped. I don't ever have to be inches within my life at the hands of somebody else. And that's because I've experienced those things.
I'm so sorry that happened to you.
I mean, the bonus is that I'm still here. So that's dope, but like, it's great to have lived through it. It sucks when it happens, and it happens a lot more than I think people realize, because there's so much stigma around talking about it, and it makes people very uncomfortable. So a lot of times people aren't aware of how prevalent those types of assaults are for both women and men. It's totally not just women. But even for the people who haven't experienced it, it's like, my hope for them, like, I'm, you know, is that like, we'll, you know, maybe learn from, like, not learn, but take our advice of, like, you know, that it can happen. Like, don't wait for it to happen to be like, okay, now I need one. Like, it's best to just prevent it entirely. So that's ultimately why, like, shooting an AR-15, I will admit, like, cause I have shot an AR-15. It is fun. I don't know why it's fun, but it is. And I do like it, but that's not why I own firearms. I own firearms because I want to know that if somebody comes for my life or comes to cause other forms of harm, like what I just mentioned, I can prevent it, because, you know, life is pretty crazy right now on this planet, and it's not really showing signs of slowing down. So I just think it's better to be prepared and never have to use it than be in the situation even once and be like, oh my God, I wish I had that, just because I've been there before and I did survive it. Not everybody does, but I did survive it. But it is not something that's ever going to leave you. Like, it sucks bad. So it's more of like an empowerment thing.
That's kind of what I wanted to do with this whole show, is like to talk about women using guns for self-defense. And like, Deborah, that's kind of like where I was trying to go with it. Like, it's like testimony said, it's an equalizer for a smaller, weaker woman, like, or man too, you know, like. And I don't understand, we both don't understand each other, but can you kind of explain to me why you think that that's a bad thing?
It's purely emotional. So it's not really logical. I have the fear issue, the fear of carrying a firearm.
But let's not talk about, like, you personally. You're never going to do it. We understand that. But when we're talking about other people and like you restricting their rights to do it.
I'm not. I would never restrict anybody else's rights. I don't have to agree with it. But I mean, there's a lot that goes on in the world that, you know, I don't necessarily agree with, but it's not up to me to say it's wrong for you. So I don't know. Is that?
Yeah, I guess so. But you did already say on the show that you would restrict certain things, though.
Well, like I'm going to use the wrong term. You know, at the assault rifles, the stuff that, you know, you don't, that you don't need for protection. It's more to cause damage to somebody else.
But what, it's not, I mean, that's what they're built to do. But why can't you use that for protection?
It just seems impractical to me.
So the practicality is, I know it's not, no, the practicality.
It's not that. It's, I don't see why it is necessary to arm yourself with something that is not intended to protect you. It's intended to cause damage. Is there not a distinction between the types of guns that, you know, are available out there?
But what does it matter if they're doing the same thing? Like,
it doesn't make any sense to me that if somebody was going to enter my house that I would need to pick up something that is going to blow my walls away, as well as a person.
Yeah. It's just, it's frustrating because you don't have any sort of like technical knowledge or basis or anything like that. But the frustrating thing is that you have this opinion with no prior investigation, you know, you don't know anything about it, but you still have this opinion that, you know, so like you come to my house and there's, you know, anytime you're sitting in my living room, there's four AR-15s without serial numbers, like around you within 10 feet of you at one time, like you're fine. You're comfortable then, right?
Well, I know you're not going to use it on me. I know you're not going to use it indiscriminately.
Then why do you? Yeah, exactly.
But is it okay? You know, the stuff that goes.
You're like a meme.
Well, then educate me. Tell me that isn't something that.
Are you talking about like a machine gun?
Like a belt-fed machine gun?
Yeah. Isn't that what an assault rifle is?
No, assault rifle, you just pull the trigger once and a bullet comes out. But
okay, I'm talking about the stuff that, you know.
But see, you think that people can get machine guns, which is like wrong. It's just plain wrong. Like you can't get a machine gun. You should be able to, but you can't.
Well, where do they come from when the people who are doing these heinous things?
They're not doing it with machine guns. They come from the CIA and their FBI handlers that give them the guns and all the money and everything to buy them. That's where they come from. Mm-hmm. Testimone, I don't want to keep you here while Deborah and I do this circular argument because we're not going to get anywhere, but it is this might be no fault of your own, the most frustrated I've ever been on this podcast. So I'm really, really thankful that you came, unless you want to keep going with Deborah and telling her stuff, but it's tough.
I'm you know, I apologize if I'm being hard-headed or. But this is what I know. So,
but you don't know anything.
That's absolutely true. I don't.
So if you don't know anything, then you should have no opinion.
No, I can have
you shouldn't have an opinion if you don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Maybe so. I don't know. I can't say that I agree with that, but. I have, I think, a...
Because you're just, like, saying stuff that's not true and not real and, like...
Well, that you have a point, yes. I don't, because I don't know. And I didn't study it because it's not... What am I going to do? Go Google different types of weapons that I should own?
Why don't you... What when you say, like, if you don't know anything about something, maybe don't have an opinion about it and like try to say like, oh, I don't know about this, but I'm still for taking them away from me, taking away my rights. Like, do you see where that's an issue?
I'm not saying that anybody's rights should be taken away.
Yes, you are. You're saying that people shouldn't be allowed to have what you call assault rifles.
Well. All right,
and
ignorance, I don't know what they are. So, you know, I'm using the wrong terminology because I don't know the technical names of things. I'm strictly talking about, you know, my fear of, maybe this is just, maybe you're right. Maybe we should continue this.
Okay. Testimony, you want to plug everything? Oh, sorry. I should call you Tess. Do you want to plug all your stuff?
Sure. If anybody would like to connect with me, I know we all use different platforms and the mainstream ones suck shit. However, if you are on Facebook, you can find me at Testamona, T-E-S-S-T-A-M-O-N-A. Instagram, Testamona for my music and main account. The, I guess you could call it a Red Pill account. My backup account, that one is at The Great Silencing. If you want to hear my music, it is available on all platforms at Testamona. My podcast is streaming on all platforms under The Great Silencing with Testamona. You can go to testamona.com. And you can also join my Telegram chat. It is called The Great Silencing Uncensored. So I believe that's everything. Oh, yeah. I don't know if I can do this on here. I probably can. I have super cool non-permissive environment tools. If people are interested in those for sale, so go to my website, go to my store if you're interested in like hidden comb, dagger blades, or anything like that. Those are back cool. in stock. Yeah, they're super dope and they go fast, but I'm obsessed with them. They're really, really nice blades. That is everything. But yeah, testamona.com or Testamona on all platforms, all the alt platforms, and then all the mainstream ones like TikTok, Instagram, all that stuff. So
rad. Do you have any final thoughts, any parting words to Deborah and our listeners? Sorry that this wasn't as seamless as I wanted it to be, but I'm really grateful that you came in and talked and told us about your experience with all this stuff.
No, I'm grateful for the conversation. I mean, I think this, like, honestly, this went a lot better than it does with in a lot of other situations where people don't already see eye to eye because it's a sensitive, it's a hot topic in the country. So I guess the only thing I'd say is, you know, like, I don't want to make anyone feel a certain type of way, but if somebody is interested in maybe like learning, you know, the other side of this and also hearing it from, you know, not the people that the media paints as like, oh, these gun nuts are crazy or whatever. Cause you know, they do that and they do that for a reason. And I think it's worth looking into why they want a disarmed society as well. Like, but check out Tactical Response. They are on YouTube. Check out, and he did just pass away recently, so God rest his soul and rest in peace to James Yeager. But check out James Yeager. He is a former law enforcement officer, served overseas as well, founder of Tactical Response. Unbelievably gifted when it comes to education with firearms and mindset and different scenarios for all different types of people. It is not just catered toward people who already know what they're doing. It really, anybody can get something out of that. It's like, it's not what you would think. So I would just recommend Tactical Response. And if you're looking for training, go to tacticalresponse.com because they train worldwide. Odds are they're having a class near to where you're at, and it is so worth it.
Rad. Well, definitely check it out. I'll send you some links from Thunder Ranch because the guy's funny and really, really insightful too.
I would love that.
Yeah. Deborah, final thoughts.
In all respect, I don't know what to say, but Tess, I do value your insight and I thank you for putting up with this mess.
Oh, it's fine. I mean, thank you for being part of the conversation. Like, I know we live in really weird times right now. So I know that it can be hard to see the other side of a topic that is, you know, carries the charge that it does in today's climate. So hopefully you got something out of the conversation, you know, to like whatever it was. But I appreciate getting to meet you guys, even if it's virtually, and I appreciate the conversation. So thank you.
Yeah, we'll have you back on whenever you want. We can talk about some real weird actual conspiracy stuff that if you want, or freedom stuff, whatever.
We're yes, well versed in all that. Of it.
So yeah, and we'll keep an eye on your show. And thanks everybody for putting up with this one. I know I could have done a better job. I get emotionally charged by this topic as well. So yeah, final words from me, stay strapped or get clapped. Thanks guys for having us. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, you guys.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people. Are those black babies? Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass. Delay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order, idiots. Playing God all day. Deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that seven-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you is a piece of crap. And you're going to be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.